Michael, you are building EtherSpot. EtherSpot is an account abstraction SDK that improves your dApp's user experience by removing a lot of pain points to make sure that the user experience is frictionless as possible. Before we dive into EtherSpot, I definitely want to talk more about account abstraction because this is a term that is so broad, so complex, people don't really understand. So how would you explain it? Let's talk about account abstraction.
Okay, thank you everyone. I'm Michael Musella. I'm the CEO of EtherSpot and Pillar. And yes, account abstraction is a jargon. It's an unfriendly jargon at that. But to me, the best way to explain it is to give Web3 UX and Web3 users a Web2-like UX while maintaining your non-custodial, decentralized nature. So I can still be using my own wallet. I can still be using a DeFi platform without giving away control of my assets. But let me benefit from the UX that I know when I go to Amazon and add something on the shopping cart. Can you imagine? Amazon said to me when I wanted to add another thing, oh, you have to log back in. That's what happens in the Web3 world. If I go to one chain and wanted to go to another chain, oh, please change your network connection. So account abstraction is just doing away with all that, because the way it is at the moment, we keep on hearing mass adoption, banking the unbanked. None of them are going to touch Web3. I just ask yourself, would your mother or father use Web3 readily? Say, oh, let me go and DeFi and just put something on Aave. Would they do that?
No. Even why? I don't do it because it's so complicated.
Why? It's uncalled for, and we have the ability to fix this. In fact, when you see the stats, around 64% or 65% of crypto assets are stored with centralized entities, meaning FTX,
Coinbase,
Binance, and we all know what happened to FTX. Who am I to say it's not going to happen to the others? And we've seen a few of them. And the whole ethos of crypto was giving independence. But because the UX is so unfriendly, we push people away to the easiest route, in this case, centralized entities.
That makes sense. That gives a really good overview. Now, I would love to know that what is actually going to happen, both from a user perspective as well as from a technical standpoint. We don't need to dive like too deeper, but just would love to understand that what is the future of when account abstraction becomes a reality?
Funny, the history of account abstraction, I think it dates back to 2015 or so. Even from our perspective in EtherSpot, and EtherSpot is being spun off from a company called Pillar, we used account abstraction, which is smart contract-based wallets, from around the end of 2018, beginning of 2019. What it means is you have a MetaMask key-based wallet and you have a smart contract-based wallet like Pillar wallet or Argent wallet. The smart contract gives you the ability to compute in the wallet so that you can do things such as recovery of your account. Recovery means you can add your laptop, your phone to your, as owners of your phone, your wallet, and you lose your phone, you can go and recover your account, your wallet, through your laptop. Further, you can even add a two-factor authentication and that email, then you can recover it through there. In fact, the initial waves was to nominate key holders for you, people you trusted, and for those to come in and rescue it for you. That was the initial idea around 2018-19. You can add things such as spending limits on a sub-account. Sub-account means, say, you've got a MetaMask wallet right now, which holds all your assets. Imagine you can subdivide that, my MetaMask account, but there is a sub account. Oh, let me use this one to connect to Aave. Then another, oh, let me use this one to connect to Yearn. Oh, another one, I'm minting this NFT. It could be rug pulled or not, I don't know. Let me connect this one and add a spending limit to it. So it behaves like your normal banking account. When you log in, you have more than one account within a bank and you see various accounts, that type of thing. And the spending limit to me is analogous to using contactless cards. When I use a contactless card, it is less secure because a person with a card reader can read it from my pocket, but it has a spending limit, a daily spending limit. The reason why I use it is it makes life easy for me. I go on a Friday, meet my friends, and I say, oh, let me buy you drinks. I go to the bar and say, one beer, one this, one that, one Pepsi for him. Then I swipe and move on.
Just tap.
The same sort of thing, analogy that the sub accounts tied in spending limits would give us. So that's the ethos of the account abstraction. So before the term account abstraction was popularized, they were called smart wallets, smart contract based wallets. So this is the historical coming of this. Now you do have, with this move by the Ethereum Foundation and core developers and projects collaborating with them like us, we wanted to define a standard for all smart wallet providers to adhere to a certain interface. And this is coming under ERC-4337. That's the code word, the Ethereum request that is being done. So with this, basically, anyone who wants to do the smart wallet activities are coming under the same band and conforming to this specific standards interfaces. And there is a couple of other additions, such as, I know it's going to get technical and boring, but let me stop before I get technical and boring with this one. So did I answer your question at all?
Yeah, no, this is super valuable. I think what exactly you mentioned around having sub-accounts, how your bank operates, where you have a checking account, you have a savings account, this is super valuable because we saw that recently Kevin Rose, who was the founder of Proof, he lost $1.1 million because he signed a phishing transaction. And that shouldn't have happened, right? Because he should have just put a little bit of money in his checking account, which he uses to sign transactions all around on Web3. And then he keeps all his valuable NFTs and valuable assets into either a cold wallet or into a savings account, kind of, which isn't whose ID or whose from where he doesn't sign at all, which he just keeps super private. So this is the ideal format in which your wallet should operate, just like a bank account.
Exactly. In fact, you even mentioned cold wallet or the cold wallets, the memory sticks, glorified memory sticks. And I can say, I've got a cold wallet, and all it takes is some guy comes in, slaps me, and takes that away from me. Oops, my bank is gone. I was my own bank, and you see the issue.
My bank is gone. I like that.
Because it only takes a slap. This big guy comes in, give me a bank. Bam. Asset is gone, millions. So at least make it, link it with 2FAs and those kinds of things. And if someone accesses my phone for bigger transactions, I have to go home and take it out, things like that.
Very interesting.
And there is another angle as well, social logins, where you can log in with your email account, Facebook account, and those kinds of things. Again, it has its own place. If your mom wanted to use this thing, and if she's already able to use her Facebook account, you can just use my Facebook account and log in. Now, this brings a question that the whole ethos of decentralization is to stay away from these data behemoths like the Googles and the Facebooks, but it is about progressive decentralization where you allow this kind of login, but with the danger being clearly publicized. What I mean by that is, if I have $100,000, I'm not going to use social login because I am as good as the credentials on a Facebook server being compromised for me to lose all my assets. So if it is like the contactless card, small amounts that I'm connecting, spending, I will use social login because I can live with losing $30 or $40.
Makes sense. So I think the biggest question that I have right now is, what happens to seed phrases? Because that's the biggest friction point or biggest barrier to entry right now, that people are like I get all my friends, I work in Web3 and I want people to use my product and see this new future. But the only barrier is that you need to have a wallet. So I try to get my friends to create a wallet on Coinbase, let's say, because Coinbase wallet currently has a really frictionless experience. But the problem is I get them to create the seed phrase private key, but then I need to teach them. I need to educate them that, hey, seed phrase is really important. Make sure you store it in a way that it is just known to you, not anyone else. Save it, write it on paper, whatever. Tattoo it on your body, whatever. But yeah, make sure this is safe because this is going to be your identity. So I think that's the biggest problem. Like just the concept around seed phrase and maintaining it and securing it. What will happen to seed phrases with account abstraction?
Yeah, I completely get you. Let's say my day job is delivering pizzas. I'm a pizza delivery driver. I've got some tips I've made and I want to invest that in some DeFi thing. Now, I'm your customer and you're asking me, and I'm your friend, one of your friends, but your customer. You're asking me to come and study how your application works. I've got a day job that pays me and I have to study all the routes and what pizza to deliver. So you want me, expect me to come and do a study on your Web3? That's what I see. So imagine you can give your friends social login, knowing full well that they are at the beginning of their journey. They can handle using their social accounts to log in and put in $20, etc. It's not that Facebook is being hacked every day, but there is the potential, as we've seen all big companies, including them, losing their login credentials. However, this is the starting point, and that's what I alluded to earlier, progressive decentralization. Meaning, when we bring the person that is just playing around, learning about it, you don't need to saddle them No. This is how you do it. You need a command prompt and type this command and type that command and save it on. You don't need that. Again, that works for, if you were to do this bell curve, on the left side would be a small percent would be the technologists. Right after them, there would be visionaries like yourself, people who imagine things. Then there is a gap. And these two sectors, the developers write it, the visionaries, they do not mind getting their hands dirty to learn about it. Then there is a gap. There is a gap because the next one, the early adopters, they like new technology, but they want it to work quick. So you have to be able to converse with them so that that gap is, how do I cross this highly technical implementation to something that is more intuitive?
Makes sense. So you mentioned that social login could be one thing that could be possible. Mm-hmm. There's another thing that I have seen right now, but I'm actually not sure how similar. Is that similar to account abstraction or it is actually account abstraction? So what I've heard is called wallet as a service, where you go to a website, you sign in with Twitter, but on the back end, the app creates a wallet for you. So it's kind of abstracting wallet for you, but I'm not sure if that's account abstraction.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yes, it is abstracting it. And because we're saying it's just a broad term, but yes, when you log in with your Twitter account, it is the social login and a wallet is created for you. And it's the same sort of thing I was mentioning. So you do not have the ownership of the private key. The private key, the one you mentioned, is kept somewhere unless argument's sake, thrown away for argument's sake. The user doesn't interact with the private key. What happens is when the user log in, that key is associated with that Twitter account. So whenever you log in, that private key is used to decrypt it. So the only time then the user would have a problem is, what if I lose my password for my Twitter? Then I would go through the normal process of requesting my Twitter password. As soon as I have access to my Twitter account, I can log into my Twitter linked wallet. But the issue I've highlighted earlier on, what if the Twitter servers were compromised and they lost my password? Then the person that hacked them has access to my wallet, log in, do things. Hence, it is a spectrum of security. If I'm doing $100,000, I'm not touching social login. I'm probably doing social the whole recovery, 2FA, and all those. Then it comes in. If I'm doing normal login, then I'll probably use social login kind of thing. So it is just a spectrum of how much security do I need.
Makes sense. So
versus, yeah.
This makes a lot of sense.
Versus usability.
Right. This makes a lot of sense that, yeah, if you are new to Web3, if you just want to try a couple of new apps over here, yeah, you don't need to go through this entire process of seed phase and stuff. Just log in with your Twitter, automatically a wallet will be created in the backend and use the software. But the moment you get invested into it a lot, where you have now put $100,000 into your wallet, that's the time when you need to start thinking a lot about security. So maybe then, this is what I'm thinking. Maybe then it's time for you to transition from transition to self-custodial wallets and make sure that you own your seed phrase and make sure that you have end-to-end control of your security. Does that make sense?
Yes, but number one, I just used 100K as an example.
Right.
Because around the world, the per capita income is different from country to country. Some of them, annually people earn $800, $900. So they're not going to see $100,000 very easily. So for them, it could be $100 or $200 or $300 might mean a lot versus the other one who has a far bigger disposable income. But in general, your risk appetite. By the way, even with the Twitter login, it is still non-custodial. It is just that as a user, you do not have access to your private key. So yeah, it's a misnomer in that it is decentralized. It is non-custodial, but no one has access to your private key. That's the thing. That private key, Twitter doesn't see it, or nor does the security provider see it. No one else does see it. It's just the program is the one that is using it. So you can argue the same thing when you log into your MetaMask on the browser plugin. That browser plugin opens your MetaMask and allows you to sign things, etc. Stored in there, but stored, encrypted, etc. So it is, again, that sort of flow. The only difference is you're not fully in control of your things. You're delegating it to software. It's like I can drive a Tesla with some automated thing versus me driving it, or me driving a manual car versus an automatic car. Sometimes you prefer, no, I want to go faster because I want to shift the gears and balance the clutch. So I want a manual car versus, no, man, I just want to go automatic. Draw that kind of analogy, maybe.
Interesting. And I believe what you meant is that nobody has access, not even you, for the private key.
Yes. Makes sense. Yes. When you use the social login, your only interface is your Twitter account or your Facebook account or whatever. So I suppose in some of the implementations, they give you the option to get your keys. They say to you, if you want your key, you can request it and the system will give it to you. So you do have, it emails it to you or something. You do have that option.
Interesting. Okay. I'm really curious to understand. So I was at ETH Denver, and ETH Denver last month, that's where EIP or ERC-4337 was announced publicly, or I don't know what's the exact term, but it was basically announced that, okay, it's ready and now it's ready to be adopted by the industry. I'm curious, what was the journey of 4337? Like, where did it start? What were the earlier conversations? How was it pushed forward? And how did we come to this place where now it's being publicly announced?
I was in ETH Denver as well, by the way.
Okay, nice.
I was sick and I was stuck in my hotel room the whole time. The place had such a cold and I had managed to catch my flu, so I was stuck. But I did make one presentation on account abstraction on a Saturday or something. I mean, when from the day that the ERC was designed, I wouldn't be able to tell you. I wasn't party to it.
Right.
Because from an account abstraction perspective, we had the account abstraction from early 2019, and we had Ethersport going from 2020. So we had that kind of thing. But what happened was there are loads of EIPs. Some of them get adoption, more traction than others. So from our perspective, we saw it coming and we've been doing this thing and we've decided, why don't we set up a group that advances ERC 4337 and basically invited, got in touch with a few other, well, I think initially with one project that does account abstraction, then invited the core Ethereum Foundation developers that were working on this. Then as such, we took on one chunk of the work. One chunk of the work is called libP2P protocol. Mm. What it means is, it is a technical thing, but let me break it down in an easier way. Correct me if I just jump in and ask me if I'm complicating it. So what happens is when you have a smart account, smart contract wallet, one of the abstractions you get is when it comes to gas payment.
Mm.
What it means is you can have a wallet that is on Gnosis chain. You wanted to do something on Gnosis chain, but you have no gas token on Gnosis chain. You have only USDC. Through the abstraction of gas payment, you can use your USDC to pay for the gas, even though Gnosis accepts XDAI for gas payment. So this is called meta transaction. Now, this meta transaction is enabled by a portion of an account abstraction implementation or smart wallet implementation called relayers. Basically, these relayers get the transaction in, what you wanted to do. They pay for the gas themselves using, in this case, XDAI. Then they deduct that amount from your XDAI, from your USDC, and the transaction is submitted. Pillar Wallet has been doing that. Argent have been doing that. But one of the issues with this is if I went and attacked the infrastructure of one of these implementations, it means I can take it down for a while. Now, with ERC 4337, one of the things it does is it creates this mempool where, and basically the same sort of architecture as I was telling you, but instead of just being the Argent relay, in this case it's called Bundler, the Ethersport Bundler, the relay thing, it becomes a mempool where I would know the next one, basically my neighboring one, then the neighboring one, then the neighboring one, then the neighboring one. Thus, if you come in, take out my relay or Bundler, the technical term, the request would go to the next one, to the next one, to the next one. So this is the bit that we have been, our team has been specifying and working on as part of the ERC 4337 group. So what this gives you is then redundancy. If you take out some service, there are others. Even better, it becomes censorship resistant because a certain jurisdiction says, ooh, any transaction coming from XYZ, you can't do that. And you don't want to go to jail, you abide by it and close it. However, the sender can say, okay, I will just spin up a bundler service, which is the relay, because now it's redundant. You can just run your own bundler service and submit your transaction. So there would be no censorship resistance. I mean, there would be no censorship. The system is resistant to censorship in this way. So that is the active role that we have played in making it robust in terms of the redundancy side.
Very interesting. I would love to know, like, what is the work being done by wallets? So you mentioned Argent Wallet, you mentioned Pillar Wallet. What is the work being done right now with all the account abstraction wallets in terms of getting this out there?
Okay, I'm not sure how actively Argent are doing some work on this one. They had the ZK side and ZK sync side, but from I can tell you from the Pillar Wallet side because I'm kind of in charge of that project. So Pillar Wallet completely consumes EtherSpot. So EtherSpot is the smart contract infrastructure. The Pillar Wallet is the app. So this app consumes EtherSpot. So it delegates all these things from to the EtherSpot layer. So what would happen is going forward, then you have, okay, you can submit to the existing main pool, just like the same we have, or you can submit to the ERC-4337 bundler service. So you have two entry points now going in the middle term. So in this case, your wallet should give you an option. Do you want to use the bundler service? Because one of the advantages of account abstraction or the bundler service, well, any account abstraction it gives you is, imagine you have a dApp, and your dApp, you wanted to do some marketing push, and you say, the first 500 users, I don't want them to pay gas. I will subsidize that. This can happen with the account abstraction service because you nominate, they call it a paymaster, you nominate a wallet. Wallet X will pay for all these transactions. Okay, then these 500 users would have their transactions. So they're minting an NFT for argument's sake. Then they mint their NFTs for free and this other wallet has paid for it. So you can use it for marketing pushes, and I'm sure there are a lot more creative people than I am. So they can think of all other possible scenarios to use it on.
Definitely. You can basically turn as many knobs, whatever knobs you want, to make a customized experience with these smart contract wallets. Now, it's all about how creative you want to go and how complex you want to build this automation.
Exactly. Exactly. Imagine you can use a fiat on-ramp service and you can just say, I have $200 spare. I wish I can buy that NFT, but I can't be asked to go to this crypto, that crypto, this network. Can I just not use my $200 and buy that NFT? Account abstraction allows you one-click action, pay that fiat, and the NFT gets sent to your wallet. With the legal side and et cetera being sorted out as well, you can even do, I want to stake on this thing for my account. So think of the possibility of you being able to click straight to the staking. So these are possibilities that can happen with account abstraction.
And how does the user experience looks like for the person who is trying to, let's say, set up this particular automation that for the first 500 people who buy this NFT, we will cover the gas. What do they do? Do they have this entire control system in their wallet, or do they have to go to a different web app?
It is more, think of it, this is more a business doing it, right? The dApp provider is a business, and the dApp provider has X amount of users. So they go to a dashboard and say, X amount of 500 users I want to subsidize. Then your system says, okay. Then in the background, your system says, any transaction that is going on this, for the first 500, don't charge this other wallet.
Right. Okay. And now this concept of paymaster and bundler, I have read about it. I'm curious, do you know an example of someone who has already done it or who is doing it right now that people can look at?
I'm sure I can send you some of our stuff. And the EtherSpot should be able to offer that.
Okay.
We have not implemented it in the Pillar Wallet, but it is out there. And oh, in terms of the bundler service, it is in testnet that we have. And you might like the name. It's called Skanda. And did I pronounce it correctly? What does Skanda mean in Sanskrit?
Skanda? I don't know.
Is it bundler or how do you say bundler in Sanskrit?
I actually don't know. Sanskrit is a very tough language. We learn about Sanskrit in like 6th, 7th grade and then nobody learns about Sanskrit anymore.
Come on. Okay. Our bundler service is called Skanda. And this is Sanskrit. So
very interesting. Very interesting. But I love it. Yeah, we are running out of all cool names. Why not go to Sanskrit? Nobody uses it.
There you go. And there are 1 billion people in India. So
exactly. Exactly. There is just one city, one small village or one small city in India that is using Sanskrit in normal language. That's it. Other than that, everybody's using derivatives of Sanskrit. Basically,
okay, it's like Latin.
Exactly. Exactly. But anyways, so what are we have talked about this gas payment structure. We have talked about a bunch of high level overview and wallet as a service. What are other things? Is there anything that you're missing in terms of the conversation on account abstraction?
I suppose one of the things we've done with the account abstraction is because we've been doing this thing, even the EtherSpot side for 3 years, we realized there was a bit of a barrier for teams to just quickly go and adapt an SDK. So we created a widget a widget, which is so easy for them to integrate into their dApp with a couple of lines of code. So with this widget, say there, if for argument's sake, KlimaDAO, you wanted to stake on KlimaDAO, you have 200 USDC, and you are on Gnosis, and KlimaDAO is a carbon offsetting service on Polygon. With this widget, you can just click on stake on Klima. It's just a normal menu choice on the Klima tab. Then it allows you to say, okay, where did you find out? You say, no, you select Gnosis chain and you put in 200 USDC. Then the bridging that needs to happen to move your USDC from Gnosis to Klima is called in the background. As a user, you've not been asked, oh, do you want to bridge it or find a bridge? Once it is bridged to the other side, to the Polygon side, you are using account abstraction where you basically put all the transactions together and abstract away the gas payment, and the user does not even need to know that that service is on Polygon, never mind find themselves some matic to pay for the gas. So their 200 USDC, which was bridged under the hood, is used to pay for the gas. And the user ultimately ends up signing twice. In fact, it can even be done in one signature. So it gives them a Web2-like UX, and it brings to the dApps, it brings all the other EVM chains available. In our case, we support 14 of them. So that is one of the innovations we've done. Just to make it easy to go from one chain to the other one, you add liquidity, you stake something. The user doesn't need to deal with all this friction. So we need this thing. And another thing we've done is called Transaction Kit. This is a library of React library. Basically, it works by putting in a React tag. So if you have, say, for argument's sake, a UI you are creating for your dApp, if you wrap it around with these tags, you would have the account abstraction code generated for you. It's connected directly to your UI. Hence, you would have this account abstracted system straight away. Again, imagine you have a betting site, and one of the betting positions people put in is, I want betting this way, then I want to hedge it, and I want another bet going this way, then another one. So let's say there are three bets placed. Under normal circumstances in the Web3 world, you put one transaction for this bet, another one for this bet, another one for this bet. But in this case, you can do them all in one. They will just go vroom, hedging it. That is abstracting away the complexities, hence giving Web3 users Web2-like UX.
Very interesting. Huh. That's definitely an interesting use case of betting. I'm curious, like, where can people actually go and try what is actually offering frictionless Web3? Because that is something that I would be really interested in. Now that account abstraction 4337 is out, now that we have seen that a bunch of account abstraction wallets are out there, I'm really curious to just get some of the Web2 people to actually experience this new flow.
You can go to bundler.ethersport.io, and I don't know if the users can see this chat.
I'll put this in the description. bundler.ethersport.io. Okay.
Yep. And go to ethersport.io altogether. You would find the bundler is a widget. You can play around with it. You can do a couple of stakings cross-chain. In fact, you don't even need to use a smart wallet. You can use your MetaMask. What it does give you is, for your MetaMask, it effectively creates an extension, an account abstraction extension to your MetaMask, so that you can do these things, even the batching, etc. I've mentioned. And ethersport.io would give you access to this thing I've mentioned about the React library, the transaction kit. And these are really useful things to play with. And if you are a developer, you can try If you are a real developer, you can play around, try.developer.dev. ethersport.dev is a dashboard, a playground where developers can, okay, what if I put in this key and do this? You can play around with it as if you have the system in your hands.
Got it. Okay. And I'm curious, like, today when someone goes on Pillar Wallet, I believe the onboarding is very similar to how onboarding on Coinbase Wallet would be, that you basically get a seed phrase, you have to make sure you protect the seed phrase, and then you proceed and your wallet is created. Mm-hmm. With account abstraction, as Pillar Wallet is adopting all the technology from Etherspot, what will be the ideal onboarding experience?
You would have an option to use your Web3 login. It's about giving the option, as we discussed earlier on, with your friends when they come on. So it would have the option to give the social login, so you can use your social media accounts. And it already has the ability to do cross-chain swaps. The Pillar wallet allows you to do cross-chain swap. So you can swap something from one chain to another one, which it uses a bridging but abstracted away. And I'm not sure whether it allows you to do multi-core, meaning more than one core batched together. So you, as a smart wallet, you can already do these kinds of things because it is account abstraction. So what would happen is in the coming months, you would have two entries, both account abstraction, but one ER34337, the other one legacy. We call it legacy. So which way do I want to use? So we can offer the users that option.
Got it. So when they are onboarding, when they download the app, they, if they want to go the self-custody route, if they want to go the legacy route, they'll create their own seed phrase. If they want to go the account abstraction route, the 4337 route, then they could do social login.
Yeah, even with the current one, I'm not sure whether we have enabled it, you would have a social login. Because the difference between ERC 4337 and the current account abstraction is they're both using smart wallets, but the difference is one uses a bundler service for transaction entry, the other one uses its own relay service. The bundler service is a public service, your relay service, your private service. So with 4337, it opens this private gate and says, okay, we're putting it in the public, but because we are going to put it in the public, there are certain protocols we have to adhere so that we don't compromise the security.
Got it. Okay.
So you have two account abstraction implementations, basically.
Interesting. And what are other teams that are really moving forward in account abstraction that people could follow?
I'm not telling you about the competition.
Okay.
I'm just joking. No, I've mentioned Argent that do account abstraction, but there is a wallet. And you have StackUp, one of the prominent guys in the Ethereum, in the ERC 4337, who I think are one of the first ones to have had a working bundler service, and a few others that are in this space. And altogether, I see everywhere a new startup doing account abstraction. So it is the term, the most, let's put it this way, the biggest bandwagon at the moment. So quite a lot of teams, but these are some of the prominent teams that are doing account abstraction. I mean, if you push me, I can list names, but
I think this is good. This is a good start because we definitely want to see like what's all the innovation that's happening in the account abstraction space, right? Like this is something that is being talked a lot about. It's also not very easily understood by everybody. So it really helps just to see what's out there, experience what's out there, and that will ideally help understand that, okay, this is what it means.
Most definitely. And if you play around the bundler service, which is the widget I've mentioned, one of the things we really focused on is giving a whole product. What I mean by a whole product is if you integrate with a dApp would probably need a fiat on-ramp. Or the other, a dApp would probably need a DEX aggregator to have access to that. A dApp would probably need a bridging service and bridging aggregator. A dApp would probably need to have access to domain names like ENS domain, unstoppable domain, fuel protocol, all those kinds of things. I suppose this is due to our background and longevity in the space. We have all this integrated in our SDK. So when you use our bundler, you want a bridge, you can access it quickly. You want an aggregator for a bridge, you can access it quickly. You want a fiat on ramp, you can access it quickly. So giving the developers and dApps a whole product offering where they can just quickly, rapidly get on with what business solution they want to offer.
Interesting. Okay. Now, one thing you also mentioned that onboarding Web2 developers to Web3. Let's talk about that. Like, what are you thinking over here? How can we attract more and more high quality Web2 developers to Web3 and make sure that they bring their intense user experience knowledge over here?
One of the ways is to make the entry barrier a little bit less. Because if you looked at years back, C++ was a hard language, but a robust language. Before that, C, then Java came. Java gave you all these libraries that C++ developers had to do themselves. In the days of Java, you just thought, okay, I'll use this library, I'll use that library. Then other languages that came after that, the Solidities, etc., they gave you these libraries and they made it easier. So in the same token, making it easier for the Web2 developers to get onboarded, that is basically what I've mentioned earlier on, the transaction kit. That's one of the things it does for you. You have a UI that says, and your screen is frozen. Oh, I thought your screen was frozen. You have your UI that says your wallet, send, or whatever. In this right now, and you wanted to do batching. To do batching means put a few transactions together. This developer would have to go and look it up on how to do these things. But what we've done is, by giving you this React library, you just put in tags, React tags, just like HTML tags. By wrapping them around that, that code is generated for you. Now, that is one of the best ways of making life easier for these developers to just play around. I gotta admit, I can do this. And because they bring a whole lot more knowledge from the wider software engineering sector that they've been working on.
Makes sense. And now I believe that people also have a very simple programming language, which is just English. They can type it to ChatGPT that, hey, code me an entire Flappy Bird app, and it's going to just spit out the entire code.
Then you get hacked. Then I'll come back and say, ChatGPT, you know the codes that you've done. Show me how to hack it.
That's true. What's
I'm just playing with you.
No, definitely. It makes sense. If it can make things, it can also break things. Curious, like, how is your team adopting this new wave of AI and ChatGPT?
One of the things you do is just for every day to day, because the way I look at it, before the 90s, I'm a man that was around the 90s, and you had barely any internet. Then everything you had to do, you had to go to a library and get the book, and you had to queue up, etc., for some books. As time went on, the 2000s, the mid-2000s, you found yourself going to the library less and less. You found materials online. In fact, you started getting PDF books. Now, I'm not going to go and read all this book. Just give me the PDF version. Even when you buy a book, you stick the PDF version. Then the search engine started getting better and better. Then you can go to a certain website and get these things. Now, this the AI-assisted generation is, to me, the next thing. Instead of me spending time reading this, because when you read this, you don't take everything. Why don't I have my assistant called a bot do the reading in the summary for me? Then I can do, okay, this summary, are you sure? Give me a second opinion on this one. Then they give me, then I use that and to make, to for the decision-making and further analysis. So to me, and we started using it exactly for this. Instead of me spending hours and hours, okay, I'll go to this resource because that's to assist me. So look at it as a graduate from some MBA short that is doing it for you, but it's just an AI bot doing it for you instead. That's how I look at it. Yes, they talk about singularity, they'll be smarter than us. I'll be too old by then for the younger generation to worry about. I'm just kidding. But yes, there is that aspect. Let's see how this progresses. But at the moment, we are using it for automation of some of the things we do and drive efficiency to what we do.
Definitely. I think a lot of people are now asking that, yeah, there are two crazy waves going on. There is this one Web3 wave, there's AI now. And how do people in Web3 see working with AI, and how do people in AI see working in Web3? I think this was a really good description that I saw, that if singularity becomes into reality, it's going to be a very powerful thing, or whatever. Like, just this general intelligence, not even the kind of intelligence where it will break the human humanity, but just having this really solid neural network that can just spit out whatever you need. This is a power, and you don't want this power to be concentrated with a small organization or a small number of people. You want this power to be decentralized. So that's where the concept of Web3 will come.
Interesting. I think that's a fascinating point. When you scale it out to all the developing nations and where there is a lot of poverty. And never mind an AI, they probably don't even have a mobile phone. If they do, it would be not a smartphone. And all those people, they would be excluded from this decision-making. Then again, they still are, because they haven't got those fancy libraries to go and read these books at anyway. But yeah, there would be a disparity, no doubt, in the whole wide world sense.
Definitely. It's so interesting that I believe that Microsoft is definitely right now going out and be like, hey, everybody download Bing Chat, because this is the best way to learn now. You don't need to read through books, especially for people in third world countries, not people, specifically students in third world countries. They don't have to read books. They can just play with Bing Chat all day and be like, I will keep asking you questions. You keep answering me. And yeah, that's how I learn.
That's interesting. I mean, I suppose, imagine when the first cars were becoming more accessible to the average person, they probably had some technical knowledge on how to fix a car, because they had to get their hands dirty. The time went, I have no business fixing my car. If you ask me to open the bonnet, I'm thinking, do I have to? that's just the evolution we have in the division of labor we started doing in our day-to-day activities. And possibly that's some aspect that might happen with these AIs. I mean, I can see the efficiency gain, but I also entertain the idea of the singularity and what next. And in fact, there was this lawyer in the UK who showed me his paper in 2018. And he's a barrister. His paper was, can we sue an algorithm? Question was, what if there was an algorithm? And now 5 years down, 4 years, 4 or 5 years down the line is the time now. His point was, what if an algorithm does something that the programmer did not intend
to,
it to do, nor has the company, but the algorithm evolved and did something, whatever this is. Who do we sue? Can we take it to court and sue it?
So interesting, because
it is interesting.
The algorithm is so smart. You are probably using the algorithm to research how to sue the algorithm.
if you sue ChatGPT, use Bard. Or use the Bing AI or something. I don't know, but it would be fascinating. Then, if all the algorithms are doing the litigation for you, then that's singularity, no?
Interesting. Yeah, that is very interesting. You just spinned up another bot to sue a bot. Huh. And then these guys are talking in the court and the judge is like, bro, I'm getting out. I need to go.
And they say, you guys have to do my head. I'll bring my own boat. Boat. You the judge.
These are very interesting hypothetical situations that people are definitely thinking about. I think Elon Musk had this idea or gave this hypothetical example of singularity. I forgot what was the exact conversation, but definitely these are interesting to think about because it might come very soon. The kind of developments we are seeing, like every 48 hours, there is a compounding change. And this is something I was talking to a friend about, that the really interesting thing that's happening right now is that it's not just that the technology is growing super fast. It's the fact that this time they're thinking about user experience a lot. So every time they have a shift in a big jump, like we go from ChatGPT to ChatGPT-4, they're also making sure that it has, or people have access to it. And people, and they're thinking of accessibility. How can any normal person also access it? And this brings more ideas of how to use this technology. And then when they go for a new jump, which recently is AutoGPT, they thought about how to make it accessible. And now we have AgentGPT, which is like, yeah, AutoGPT is a cool tech, but it's behind GitHub repo and stuff like that. How would normal people access it? So they made it more accessible via AgentGPT. And now everybody's like jumping with their crazy ideas, because there are people who are builders and then there are people who just are creative, who have ideas. The creative ideas don't want to deal with all this tech stuff, and the tech guys don't know what all creative things they can do. So I think this time we have the perfect combo of builders and creators.
That's fascinating. And imagine the dimension as well. And people start using it in another language and feeling it data from all other cultures. Then again, you would ask how much of the data in other parts of the world are digitized. But think of the various dimensions that this can take. And it is fascinating. It is fascinating to witness. And let's see how the Terminator movies where Skynet took over might just yet happen.
Definitely. All right. With this particular crazy thought, let's end this conversation. But Michael, thank you so much for hopping on. I learned a lot about account abstraction from you.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to talk to you. And if anyone wants to learn more about account abstraction, please check our links out and come to our Discord, Telegram groups. We're more than happy to help you guys out, especially if you guys are developers. Use your time effectively. Use the libraries we built, just like we are using AI tools like ChatGPT to create efficiency. You do not need to write things from scratch. We've done it for you. We've done it for you over the past 3 years. Tried and tested. Thank you.
Definitely. Check out etherspot.io.